I thought it'd be worth just introducing myself. My name's Nathan. I'm married to Emma. I have five kids, so I have a youth group of my own, which is pretty good fun. I'm based in Enfield, North London, and I've been there for 5 years full time. I've actually been involved in youth work for 35 years. Now you may be thinking he's surely not that old, but I have. I was 18 years as a punter, and then I've been 17 years involved in the leadership of youth work, and then 5 years of those have been doing that full time. At this church in Enfield. And I was saved by Jesus at about 10 years old through a children's and youth work. And that is why I'm now passionate about making sure Jesus is known to that age group. Just as an interesting, how many guys got converted in kind of children's or teenage years here? Yeah, so I'm preaching to the converted about children's and youth work in that this is genuinely a good thing to do, and our heart has to be in making sure that it's known. I got given this title, I think partly because I made a comment. I got invited to a youth work consultation for the FIC, and I was looking around the table, and all the guys around the table are guys with established youth works. So the churches have kind of, or larger perhaps churches with youth works of kind of 50, 60, 100 plus kids in their stuff. And one of the things I'd noted was that actually there's no point in us guys talking about kind of youth work as such, because actually most churches, and including some of the churches I grew up in, have either no youth work or like kids from kind of 8 to 18, and there's kind of a splattering in that mix, and so therefore youth work takes on a very different form. And so one of the reasons I think I got given this title to do as a seminar here is that that actually lots of churches struggle to how to start a youth work, or have picked one up that, you know, through coming into the church that has a long history, but you kind of think this needs something doing to it if it's going to be a little bit more Jesus-centered and things like that. So that's kind of where we're going to pitch it today. It would be really helpful, because I think we're probably going to get more out of this session if I can kind of just gauge a little bit where you guys are at. So if you have a youth work going in your church, do you want to put your hand up for a second? Yeah, so some of you do. Who's looking genuinely to start a kids' work? Yeah, so that's really helpful. And in the guys who've got some kids' work going on, how many of you guys have kind of, is that something you're thinking, this needs some attention, this needs some kind of revitalizing here? Yeah, that's really helpful. So I think the way that we'll play it today is I've got some stuff. You know, when they gave me this seminar, I'm a doer. So my mind immediately raced to, I could give them a big list of everything that they'd need to do to start a youth work. But then actually I backtracked and I thought, actually, before, I mean, you can Google stuff like that. You know, you can ring up someone and find out the practicalities. The thing I really want to take you through is kind of what's driven what has to drive your youth work, what you have to do and be thinking in order to start a youth work. And so that's where we're going to go today. And the first thing I want to start with is why a kids and a youth work? Why would you start a kids and youth work? And I guess you need to clarify to start with what you mean by a kids and youth work, because most of us, if we've grown up in churches, will traditionally think of either a midweek youth work, or we'll think of kind of Sunday morning, kind of Sunday school, whether that's before church or kind of in church, during church, or in the afternoon. And we'll traditionally think of youth work in those two ways. But I also want to stretch your thinking a little bit and say, actually, the moment that you get the Bible open with a young person or a kid, you're doing youth work, even if that's one. So even if you've got one teenager in your church, and you say to that teenager, can I read the Bible with you? You're doing youth work. And I just want to encourage you with that. So you've got to kind of get your mindset right about what it means to be doing youth work. Sometimes we kind of paint this bells and whistles, you know, massive youth group, hundreds of kids coming in, and, you know, pool tables and all this kind of stuff. But actually, the moment you get the Bible open with a teenager, you're doing youth work. Or the moment you teach a kid a Bible story, you're doing children's work. And I want to encourage you with that. And I kind of have worked on this principle as I've done children's and youth work, that Sunday, if you're doing a Sunday kids' work, the way that I shape Sunday kids' work is that I presume knowledge, but I don't presume they're Christians. So kids who've been coming to church for a while, the families are probably likely to come to church. Now, that's not always true of a Sunday work. So I went to a church on holiday, and they drove a bus around the village, picked up all these kids, and clearly kids from non-church families, and they taught them on a Sunday. So that's really no knowledge and no Christians. And so that's a different beast on a Sunday. But generally, Sunday's church kids, or kids who've been invited to come to church, And then midweek tends to be kind of a more kind of blatant opportunity to reach kids. So on a midweek group, if I'm planning one of those or starting one of those, I presume neither. I presume no knowledge, and I presume they're not Christians. And that's kind of the foundation from which you shape kids and youth work. Now, why are kids and youth work? I want to give you a couple of knots to start with. Why these are not reasons you should start a kids and youth work. So first of all, it's what churches do. So it's very easy to come to a conference like this, and you know, you talk to another pastor or something, and oh yeah, you know, how's it going? Oh yeah, the church is really flourishing. You know, we've got 1 million children coming to our kids work, and you think, oh, I should really have a kids work because that's what all the healthy churches do. That's not a reason. If that is your reason for starting a kids and youth work, when it starts to go a bit wobbly, and kids start disappearing, and you know, you get the discouragements of kids walking away from your youth group, you will be crushed. If that is your reason, you cannot have that just because somebody else is doing it. Another reason here is that kids are a sneaky way to reach families. Actually, that's true, but that should not be your reason for doing a kids work. They're not just a tool for reaching out into your community. Okay, that is true. Actually, factually, as you reach out to kids, it is a great opportunity to reach their families. But that's not why you do a kids and youth work. You don't do it because you need to compete with the local scout group. And what I mean by that is it's very often that you might have a few kids in your church, especially if it's a small church, and the kids, the pressure's on the parents, oh, there's this scouts group, and the kids want to go to the scouts group, and you think, but we've got to keep them, so we need to do a youth work. And if it's just about keeping the kids, then that's not a good reason as well, because when the difficult times come, you'll be crushed. And the other reason why you mustn't start a youth work is because you need to get the kids out of church because they're noisy. If it's just to occupy them, then that's another wrong reason for doing kids and youth work. And one of the things I want to start with is really giving you a set of reasons why. This has to be your foundation. This has to be why you do youth work. If you're going to revitalize or you're going to start something, this has to be where you start. And the first reason we do a kids and youth work is we have a gospel that saves. Now, I know we're all signed up to that. But that has to be it. In Romans it says, doesn't it, I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God to save everyone who believes. That includes children. That includes teenagers. So we have a gospel that saves. And that is part of the reason that we want to do a children's and youth work, because it saves them. Secondly, the Bible commands us to pass on the gospel to the next generation. So the Psalm 78, for example, are very strong psalms on the passing on of the good deeds of God to the next generation. And as you kind of work your way through the Bible, that works itself out in two ways. So first of all, it works itself out in a parenting context. So the primary responsibility in a church is for parents to pass on the gospel to their children. But it's also a corporate thing. So the church can't hide from this, because actually the corporate people of God are together commanded to pass on the gospel to the next generation. So we do a kids' work out of obedience, out of a love for our Lord, who says, pass the gospel of Jesus on to the next generation. And I can't remember, some clever person probably said it somewhere along the line, but I've heard it and it stuck with me, that the church is only ever one generation away from extinction. And that kind of sharpens the focus, doesn't it? That you have to pass the gospel on. We're commanded to do it. The third reason why you would want to do it is that the Bible speaks about kids being a very teachable and view-forming age to learn. Now, you might think, where on earth does it say that? Well, it doesn't say it in exactly those words. But it does say that Proverbs, for example, teach a child in the way they shall go, and they will not turn from it. Now, why does it say that? Well, because in God's design for humans, we're whole people, in God's design for humans, as you pass through that child age, you are at an age where you're designed to be teachable. You're designed to learn. You're designed to shape your views. And that does happen in adult life. But in God's good design, it happens especially in children and teenagers. And so actually, we want to be passing on the gospel to kids, because God says that's the age when they're learning. That's the age when they're shaping their views. That's the age when they're teachable. And again, that's in a parenting context. You know, Ephesians, bring up your children in the training and instruction of the Lord. It's there because they're in that teaching age when you teach them, when you walk down the street, when you stand. But why? Because they're teachable. And that's what we should be doing. Dawkins would accuse us of brainwashing, but our Creator says that's the way that we should do it, which is to teach them when they're young. And then fourthly, there is a place for doing that in age-specific ways. So sharing the gospel, preaching the gospel in an age-specific way. So actually, do I think that kids can sit in church and listen? Absolutely. I'm going to talk to you about that later. But I also think that, you know, it really helps. So I've got my three-year-old. It really helps to explain things to her in a three-year-old way. And she's very different place to my nine-year-old. So if you had the, I would say privilege, but I don't think it would be, of coming to breakfast in our house, a family Bible time is just chaotic. So my three-year-old daughter, anytime I ask a question, out of a great desire to please, will swing round and say to me, Jesus died on a cross to take our sins away. And then she'll sit there, like looking around at everyone else at the table. and I always say, that's right. And my nine-year-old's like, but Dad, that's not what we're talking about. Well, yeah, but it is right. So let's just carry on. And we're talking about Elijah. Well, even the story of Elijah is about Jesus. So yeah, well done, TJ. She's sitting there. And Ethan's like eyeballing me across the table, you know, kind of. So, but I think what I'm trying to say is there is a place to do it in age-specific ways. There is a place for fellowship, there's a place for them kind of being taught in chunks they can manage. You know, just as you feed a baby when they're young and you don't, you know, you kind of put the food in mushed up form, actually that's kind of what you're doing for a kid. You're taking the Bible in mushed up form, not mushed up theologically, mushed up in terms of bite size, so that they can manage it and they can eat it and they can enjoy it. Number five, children and young people are part of the church. Why do it? Because God has given them to the church. You know, they are equally part of the church. And that's one of the reasons you do it. And I want to say, and I've started there, and you're probably all looking at me thinking, oh, I wish I hadn't come to this seminar. I know all of that. But I've just want to tell you that again, because that is where you've got to start. If that is not your conviction, if that is not why you do youth work, then you will be crushed when it goes wrong. You will lose hope. You will lose heart. You will, you know, I've been doing kids work for a long time, and it's up and down all the time. You know, kids come in. You know, I could tell you about some phases. I mean, Duke is here. Duke helped me for a while on some of our teenage work, and you know, there were phases where it was just chaotic. You know, we had over 100 teenagers on a Friday night, and you know, they were from really tough backgrounds. My mate's son thought I ran the coolest youth group in the world because I had police riot vans out. I had an ambulance one week, and you know, and my friend texted me and said, "Is it a fire engine this week?" And I'm saying, "I'm praying not, because that would be a disaster." But you know, we go through that phase, and then where are we now? Well, on a Friday night, we're back down to kind of, I say back down, but you have to take this in a context of we're in a sort of a city area. So we're back down to 40 teenagers on a Friday night, and we are, you know, they're quite well-behaved kids. You know, there's no one who wants to pull a bottle on me or anything at the moment. And so I'm just saying, if you're up and down, but you see, if I didn't have these foundations for why you're doing a kids and youth work, I'd think, oh well, we've failed now. You know, we're not reaching all these 100 kids anymore. So is that helpful? I want to pause there, just give a chance for questions about that, and then I'll kind of move on. No,
how do you determine the age for your youth work? Do you have like senior school or primary age? Or?
Yeah, can I come to that? Because I think for us specifically, because we're a larger church, we actually have kids across all the ranges. What I want to say in a moment is that actually, when you're starting a kids and youth work, you may not have that demographic, so you have to kind of think carefully about the who of your kids. So shall I move on to the who? So I guess an obvious question to start with when you're going to do a kids and youth work is who? And there's two who's: who are my kids, and who are my leaders? And you have to have both, because you can't start a youth work without them. So you can have some great leaders and no kids, and you can have lots of kids and no leaders. And the two kind of have to come together. And so thinking about kids, the thing that I've always advised people or tried to help people with is you've got to start where you are. So you may have, let's paint a scenario, you've got a church where you've got two families and they've got a baby, a preschooler and a primary schooler. Each family, so two families of this. Now that is your kids. And you, there's no point in sitting down and thinking, I'm going to start a teenage youth work, and you know, and you've got to start where you are, and you've got to say, look, these are the kids that God has given us. These are the ones that he's given us the responsibility to pass the gospel on to. This is the next generation. So how am I going to teach these guys? And if you read kind of lots of youth work books, they talk about a model called the inside out, which sounds incredibly painful to me. But it's the inside out model where basically you work on your kids in the church and they become your means of reaching out. That they are your disciples, which will then invite their friends in to come to the youth work. And so there's no point, and it does work. You know, I have seen churches go out and cold contact teenagers and try and start a youth group. And some of that is very effective. But in my experience, the most effective way is inside out, where you start with what you've got. You nurture them, you love them, you get the families on board. And if you start a midweek with some kids of, you know, so you've got a kind of a primary school age group, and you say, you know, why don't you think about a friend you can invite? And then suddenly you've got four kids rather than two because they bring a mate from their class or something. And do you see what I'm trying to say? So start where you're at is a good place to do. And that what that might mean when you start a kids' work, coming to your question, Stephen, about that, is that actually you could end up with a huge age range. So your first youth group could be the whole of primary school. And you think, wow, is that possible that I could teach a reception with a year six, which is my breakfast table? Okay, so is that possible? I think it is, if that's where you're starting. If resources allow, so the two are linked, if you've got leaders, then you might say, well, we'll do something together to start with, a primary school age thing, but then when it comes to talking about it, we'll split off into different teams. So there's two leaders, and one's going to take the kind of the upper end, and one takes the lower end. I have to say there is no... So again, if you look historically, we've kind of chopped it. I was trying to find the answer the other day, why we do 11 to 14s and 14 to 18s. And I can't find out why we've chopped it that way. There's nothing magical about that formula. You know. And in fact, I'd say it's probably better to do 11 to 16s and then maybe 16 plus, because there's such a transition in that age group in my experience. And actually, a 14-year-old is in a swinging point between wanting to be an 11-year-old and wanting to be an 18-year-old. So there's this kind of funny bit in the middle. And so don't be bound by what other people have done with age restrictions when you're starting a youth work. You know, it's very easy to look around and even materials, you know, 11 to 14. Schools don't divide it like that necessarily. I mean, there is kind of, so some schools in London have a kind of a lower school and an upper school in secondary school. But it's not as neat and tidy as kind of 11 to 14s, 14 to 18s. It's sort of, there's crossover. So that's where to start if you have a few kids. I also want to say if you're revitalizing, so if you've got a kids' work, this is the biggest battle you will have. If you've got a kids' work already and it's got 20 kids in, okay, so it's a big group and they're kids from the area and you think something's got to change here, then I want to encourage you not be afraid to lose kids. If you're making changes for the gospel reasons that we've talked about, so that the reasons on the previous page, don't be afraid to lose kids. You will get such flack for that. Honestly, I've changed some stuff and I lost some kids because I changed it. And I got such flack, you know, well, you're losing all these kids, you know, you're taking away their chance to kind of be part of church. But the point is they weren't hearing the gospel. So there was no point in them just being there. And it's the gospel that drove them away, because I took away their football, and that's the bottom line. You know, they were there for the football; they weren't there for the gospel. Now, actually, if they come for the gospel, I'll also give them a football. but that's just the way that we do it. But it's got to be that. So does that make sense? So there's this kind of idea: it's okay to lose kids. Now, that's one of the things we're slightly afraid of, because we think we need kids to do a youth work, but it's okay to have a youth group that's got two kids in it. It is all right. Believe it or not, and you've got to persevere, because in God's timing and sovereignty, so God has the DNA of your youth group. He has the size of your youth group sorted. Your job is to make your youth group healthy, which is to teach the Bible and to love the kids. So don't be afraid to lose kids. And now, if you're here and you're saying, "Well, I've got no kids, but I want to start a kids' youth work," you know, is that okay? It is okay. Yeah, absolutely. If your passion is that we're in this village and I go out into the village or I go out into the town and there are hundreds of kids all around. You know, people walk past our building to go to school and, you know, how am I going to get these kids? Then be creative. You know, why not gather a team of people and run a family fun day one Saturday? Why not start a mums and tots group, because then you get them young and you win their trust, and then when they come up, you've got your youth group forming. You know, why not run a holiday club? You know, why not, if you're small in number to run a holiday club, but you've got kids in the village, why not go to another FIC church and say, could you spare me some helpers? You know, there are FIC churches that run holiday clubs because they have teams to do so. Why not go to one and say, could you repeat what you've done in our church for us? I've done that for a couple of churches, and it's fun to do, and it's great to work with a new team and bring some people along. And what that does is it forges you some relationships from which you can then prayerfully and creatively try to start something midweek. So kids come to a holiday club. Oh wow, is this on every week? No, but actually it could be something you start, you pick up on. So be creative, run an after school club. So maybe you've got a link. You know, lots of schools are actually surprisingly open if you say, we'd love to, you know, we're a local church, we'd love to do an after-school club one day, just to teach a few Bible stories, play some games. Would you be willing to do that? Now, I know we've kind of got this kind of mega-secular society that doesn't want you to teach anything, but to kids as truth. but actually, you'd just be surprised. I mean, what's the worst they can say? No, you're a loony, go away. You know, so what? They've called you a loony. Do you see what I mean? So don't be afraid to, if you want to be creative, to go to a school and to just say, could we start something? Or could we advertise something at your school? That kind of idea. So just be creative. There's no kind of silver bullet for kind of starting a kids and youth work. You just got to be creative. You've got to be prayerful. And you've got to build relationships with your community. And then there may be the chance to start something if you've got no kids. What about your staff and your workers? You need them. ministry, so a principle I've always operated on is ministry often flows from those who are enthusiastic about something. So if you stand up at the front of church and say, we want to start a kids and youth work, is there anyone who wants to do it? And everyone's looking blankly at you and kind of unenthusiastic. That's probably a sign that you haven't got anyone who is going to run passionately with the youth work. But if you've got a passion for it, ministry often flows out of something you have a passion for. And so if you've got a group of people who are passionate about reaching children, nervous maybe, but think, no, this is a really good thing, we'd love to devote some time and energy to it, they're the people you start with. That's your workers. And then what you need to think carefully is do I have the people, and do they have the skills? Do they have the ability to teach? Do they have the ability to kind of engage with children? That kind of idea. So you've got to think about the who carefully when you start. And it may be that even though the heart is there to start a youth work, if you don't have the workers other than yourself, then it may be that the time is not quite right. And God has laid something on your heart to pray about and to start. But then you may want to just wait until God provides you a team, because you can't do it on your own. For lots of reasons, but not least now because we're child protection and stuff like that. So it could be that you're massively passionate for it, someone's willing to come and help you, and that's a good thing. And so start with that. That's the kind of a place to start. Does anyone want to ask a question about the kind of the who? Yep.
That kind of idea of obviously going for those who are enthusiastic, would you kind of cast vision massively generally, almost to the church as a whole, and then recruit from there? Or would you kind of do a bit of kind of almost quiet recruitment and then cast a vision to that team? Because obviously, I don't know how you'd say it nicely, but sometimes you get those who you think maybe are too, but they are.
Totally.
So would you kind of just cast out the net and then work with who comes? Or would you do a bit of recruitment and then cast a vision to them?
I think that depends on the size of your church. So for example, I guess in a smaller church you'd know people anyway, so you probably wouldn't need to cast the net as such, because everyone's got relationships with everyone, and so you'd probably know quite quickly. I think you've hit a key point there, which is not everyone who's enthusiastic is suitable for it, and I think you just have to be kind of brutal with people as well, and you know, we're supposed to speak the truth to one another in love, and actually, if I've had to say to people, you know, thanks, but actually, I don't think you're cut out for youth work. But here's some really good things you could be doing. So don't kind of squash people and then don't give them anything to do. But I don't think I've answered your question, but I think I'm just saying that it's probably not as straightforward as kind of, I think you're right, you just have to filter people. I think that's probably the answer to the question, and whatever way you do that.
Just listen to what people pray for in the prayer meeting.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really good giveaway. So I think the prayer meeting is my favourite meeting at church. And it's partly my favourite meeting just because you see where people's hearts are at. You know, people who are calling out and saying, Lord, we've got all these children in our area. We long to see them saved. They're probably the guys that you want on board because praying drives a ministry.
Just two things. One is just a kind of comment to sort of back up something you've already said about don't be afraid to lose kids. One of the things I've always been told since starting youth work is don't be afraid, never do, well, any ministry, but certainly kids ministry at all costs.
Yeah, yeah.
So no matter what, we're going to get these kids in, so we won't have any rules. They can do whatever they want because that's what they want. And as long as they're coming in, that's the main thing. And it's just no way to run a youth ministry. I think you're right, just having the right perspective and motivations. And not
definitely.
Afraid about, never run a ministry at all costs.
Yeah, thanks for that.
I think that's a good point. But one of the problems we've got is, I had an email again just this morning.
Yeah.
We need we look up enough helpers. We need three more helpers for Sunday and this kind of stuff. That's almost in the life of our church. That happens
regularly.
A lot. Just suddenly things happen. People have to pull out or this, that, and the other. And trying to recruit people has been our biggest problem.
Yeah.
Now we've got a fairly big youth ministry running, so it's this big machine.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a lot of pressure then to keep it going.
To keep the machine going. Absolutely.
Because you've got so many kids who are ready to turn up.
Yeah.
You know, and families who want the kids to be ministered to in the church. But there's just nobody to do it. And it's been a constant pressure. And dissatisfying about that. That doesn't feel like that's the way we should be going. And trying to cast visions and trying to inspire people, there's all of that going on as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've had that kind of experience before and how to deal with that.
And
the other, just as an aside there, thinking about, well, how can we, if families really want this ministry to continue, how do we feel about going to those families and saying, well, if you want this, we've got no one to run it, well, why don't you try and think about, why don't you think about running it? If this is something you really want. I mean, do you have any comments about that?
I do. Can I tackle the first one? So the first one was kind of more about kind of what you do. I have to say, I think in a larger machine, the constant challenge, and particularly if you're staffed to run the youth work, one of the constant challenges is just keeping up workers. I would also make a kind of a distinction in the types of workers. So there is guys that you would have who you would let teach. There is guys that you would have who you're very happy to be there to kind of crowd control the kids, for want of a better word. And there are guys that you would have, depending on the size of your youth work, you're very happy to have in the building to do practical tasks. So this is going to make it sound like I work in Harlem, but we had bouncers. I got two massive guys from our church at one point in our youth work's life to just stand on the door and stare at people who were messing around and keep the ones out who we didn't want in. And you know, did they like youth work? No. One of the guys who stood on the door said, "I hate teenagers." He was the right kind of guy for the job. But you see, he could be involved in my youth work. And I think it's just saying that there is a grading. So, you know, actually, is it good that Doris wants to come in and serve squash to the kids? Absolutely. And I think it broadens the net of who you might have as helpers. So I think, I'm afraid to say, my experience is you're just constantly wrestling with how to staff stuff. I think if it becomes a really big issue, you do have to address the church, probably publicly, and say, guys, if we're passionate about the youth work, we're really going to have to pull out some help here because we're struggling to keep it going and keeping it resourced.
Well, it could be a concept of the tail wagging the dog.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in a previous church, not our present one, we've got a different set of issues. In a previous church, there was a fair number of people coming. This was a midweek youth work, but the people were getting so tired and stressed and missing prayer meetings and Bibles and other things, and the pastor stopped it.
Yeah.
Stop this.
Yeah.
It's just the towel's wagging the dog now. I mean, it comes a lot of controversy, but
it
did raise an issue of actually, if you're not careful in certain respects, the towel can end up wagging the dog. You're not being about your Christian faith and getting on yourself with other things.
Yeah. I think there is careful. I think the problem is it's got to be case by case. You know, there's often not a rule or a template, which is why kind of where I started as to why you're doing it. You know, that's got to be your foundation, because you may hit points where, you know, it's good. There's lots of kids coming, but you can't resource it. It's kind of, it's got out of control. You know, it's breakage in the church. You know, there's lots of reasons why you would have to consider and review things. But
into this kind of frame of thinking, even subconsciously, you've got this machine going. You've just got to keep it
going. Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a bigger church issue, though, isn't it? Really, which is that churches are very reluctant to stop stuff. But partly with kids, you know, particularly it becomes very emotive, doesn't it, when there are people that are there to be reached out to, and you think, I'm closing down my contact with people that are to be reached out to, and so that's what makes it more emotive than, you know, should we stop flowers at the front of church or not? Because, you know, whilst people get a bit upset about it, it's not a people issue. It's a, and so I think it's just very complicated and. Yeah.
Half of which have got mental health and social problems, the other half are old and decrepit, but that's not about me. We've got two or three couples, either me and my elder and my wife.
Yeah.
And two or three others. And I've been thinking a week about, because when I first came here 3 years ago, we had a couple of people who were doing their best. With half a dozen kids, but they were kids from another church anyway, so I said, stop this.
Yeah, yeah.
We're not reaching out and we're just killing ourselves. So I stopped it about 18 months ago. But I've still got a burden to get it to have some kind of midweek sometime soon. But where's the magic shop where you buy the members?
Yeah, absolutely.
You buy members and work
so
much.
Yeah.
But you've encouraged me, because I'm thinking, unless I've got a midweek club going, we haven't got a youth group, but we have half a dozen kids coming.
Exactly, and that's where you start. Yeah, yeah.
We've got a very effective branch where the kids are being taught.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking now, well, maybe I should stop focusing on a midweek youth group club and just concentrate on the club.
Yeah.
And perhaps see how it develops out of that over time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I don't know if people were hearing that, but basically there's there are kids in the church. There's an effective program of teaching them. But you see, so if you want to start a midweek thing, my thing would be, you've got to start with them. You've got to start with those guys. And I don't know the context. I don't know whether they're in a village school near where you are, or a town school, or whatever it is. But they will have mates who probably live in their locality. And therefore, you've got to, just as with any discipleship for adults or kids, you've got to give them the heart that they've got a message that is to be passed on. And so therefore, actually, if you sell that to the families, sell is probably not the right word, but you know what I mean, if you kind of get the families on board of praying about that, if you raise the profile of praying for reaching out, then actually the kids that you have and the families that you have will start to think, well, maybe we should invite some kids along.
I'm thinking how we go about this, or do we go about this at this moment. I'll say, we're thinking of having a midweek youth group. Would you kids like to come along with us?
Well, I'd speak to the families first. I think you have to do it in kind of consultation, see if you can get them on board with the big idea, and then go for it. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and
you made a very important statement, which I thought was helpful. It may not be the time.
Yeah,
that was very helpful.
And I think we have to be realistic about that. Actually, sometimes.
Yeah.
Can I move on to the how? Is that all right? It's okay. Just because I'm keen to kind of hit the meat of kind of so we've talked about kind of why, we've talked about who. What I want to do now is talk about how. Now, I may not hit all the practical issues you want to hit here, but I want to share really probably from my personal experience for what that's worth, and I want to show you kind of what has made me tick. And then the reason I'm not going to tell you how is that I don't know where you are, and I don't know your kids, and I don't know your context. And the shape, so the package that your youth group will take might look very different to the way that mine looks. And what I don't want you to do is say, I do this, and then you think, well, that's the way I've got to do it. But what I want to kind of come back to is kind of the foundation of what I try to work into our youth group, if that makes sense. So let me take you through these. So Jesus-centered Bible teaching kids work, and I've put it deliberately like that, Jesus-centered Bible teaching, because you can be in a church that is Jesus-centered, if that's possible, without Bible teaching. So you could go to a youth group that talks about Jesus. You know, Jesus is really important to us, but never opens the Bible with their kids. And you can go to a church that opens their Bibles, but never talks about Jesus. And the distinctive that we have is that we are Jesus-centered in our youth work, and we're Bible teaching. That is gospel-centered youth work. And I put it deliberately and provocatively like that, really. And I want to say two things about that. First of all, it's our distinctive. So perhaps less so in a rural setting, I don't know. But in the town where I am, there are probably 5 or 6 social work youth groups. You know, there are plenty of places that teenagers could go or kids could go. There's Scouts, there's Rainbows, there's Brownies, there's, you know, there's the local sports teams. There are lots of places kids can go to get off the street. There are lots of places they can go and have some fun and some entertainment. Our distinctive is that we can offer them Jesus. That is what distinctively marks out our kids and the youth work that we do. And so your group, whatever shape your program takes, has to reflect that that's our distinctive. And actually, I'd go one stage further in saying we've got nothing better to offer kids. So people think that the best thing we can offer kids sometimes is an Xbox, a place to hang out, a cup of hot chocolate, a squash and a biscuit, some craft to do, because it keeps them occupied, you know, they're happy, that kind of stuff. Now, I presume most of us aren't there, but actually, we've got nothing better to offer kids than the gospel of Jesus. That is the best thing, and you can have so much fun offering that to them. I promise you, you can. And you can totally grip them, you can totally love them, while keeping your distinctive in your youth work. Now, let me try and kind of explain how that looks. So I've always operated by 3 principles. I'm a simpleton, I'm not a very academic guy, but these are my 3 principles of youth work. And this is always what I teach my teams when I go in. First of all, I want to teach Jesus. It's through and through, I want to teach him. I want to teach him from anywhere I can in the Bible. I want to teach Jesus. He's our Saviour. He's the one who saves, so I want to teach him. And I want to do it with Bibles open. Whatever age they are, I want to get the Bible open with them. And I want to say, actually, Jesus, here, in the Bible. And then I want to do it by building relationships. So whether they are 3 or whether they're 18, I want to build relationships with them that build a context in which I can teach them Jesus with a Bible open. Now, that may be a bit noddy, but that is my 3 principles. And prayerfully, those have been 3 things I've tried to work out in lots of different contexts in which I've done youth work. So those are my really. And the shape that will take for you might look very different to the shape that looks like for me when I work that out in my youth work. Partly because we're whole people, we're characters, you might love different stuff to what I do. You know, you might. The thing, one of the lies, and again, I guess you guys aren't here, is that to do youth work, you have to have a young and a trendy guy. I mean, I fall down there straight away. But if you have to have a young and a trendy guy doing it, you know, because that will keep the teenagers, or, you know, you have to have someone. But actually, you don't. You know, you don't have to have that. You know, our distinctive is this Bible-centered Jesus teaching youth work, building relationships, and if you don't have to be young to do that, you don't have to be trendy to do that. Actually, you can do that and have a lot of fun with kids without being those things. If you're going to start a kids work, you have to pick one. So there's no point umming and ahhing. You have to pick something to do and go for it. So you either have to pick doing something midweek. You think, well, let's have a plump for doing something after school, or you think I'm gonna do a Sunday one. They look different in the way they'll shape up, but you have to pick one, and you have to go for it. That's the place to start if you're going to do something. Now, it may fail, but that's okay. It's all right to fail, as long as you're failing for the right reasons. But it's okay to fail. but you've got to go for something. And then here's kind of, this is what I really want to work through in terms of the shape of your group. This is always what we try and do. So Bible first, Bible focused, Bible teaching. Let me try and explain what I mean. First of all, Bible first. What you speak about shows what's most important to you. And it's absolutely true with your youth work. What they come into, what they do when they arrive, says what your group is all about. And so, historically, groups, you know, have had this kind of, and all from good motives, but they have all these kids in, and then they do a little kind of slot at the end of teaching about God at the end of a club, and then they go home. And all the kids endure, they switch off for the last 10 minutes, and then they go. Whereas actually, what I think, if we really believe that the Bible teaching and Jesus-centered Bible teaching is our distinctive, then it has to come first in the group. So let me tell you how that works out in two of our groups. So we run a group called Whiz Kids, which is for years 2 to 4. And what we do is we kind of have a buffer zone, partly because we live in an area where timekeeping isn't the strong point that's of lots of cultures that are represented. And so we have this kind of buffer zone when people arrive, which is that kind of 10 minutes, they come in, the kids, they're in teams, so they get into their team, they'll have an activity. Now, sometimes, it's unbiblically, it's Lego, sometimes it's a colouring sheet, like a memory verse, and then at the end of that kind of 10 minutes, 15-minute buffer zone, we get them to find the place in the Bible that we're going to be looking from on our tables with a team leader. So they're looking up, they're learning how to find a place in the Bible, then they colour a bookmark at the start of each term with the memory verse on, they shove it in their Bibles, and then they pick up their Bible and they go to the seats. And then we do about half an hour of singing, memory verse games, teaching from the front with them. And then they go back to their team tables, and there's often a question or two on the screen, and then they discuss those questions for another 10 minutes, and then we divide the rest of the evening up into activities, so that they will change between a craft activity and a sports activity, and then they'll divide halfway, and I'll have a drink in between. So that's how we've shaped it up. And then they'll come all back together at the end, and we'll say the memory verse together, or we'll do something, and then we'll pray together, and then they'll go home. Now, that's years 2 to 4 for us. But what I'm trying to illustrate there is we want to put the Bible at the start. And actually, it ends up taking the whole thing kind of 45, 50 minutes of the club. Now, some people would think, that's crazy. You can't get years 2 to 4 to spend that long kind of looking at Bible stuff. Now, we think we're getting them to sit there like this, kind of studying the Bible, but we're not. It's interactive. We're engaging them. We're telling them stories. We're teaching them Jesus. We're singing songs. We're getting them to love the Bible, but it shapes. It's first. It shapes what we do. The other thing that we then do is Bible-focused. So do you want an example of what we do with the teenagers? Perhaps that would be helpful. So with our... Yeah.
Sorry, can I ask you? What percentage of those kids, roughly, are non-church kids?
So this is our midweek group. So our midweek one, the one I just told you about, I would say that is probably 60% non-church kids. I don't want to say numbers because numbers makes it sound like I'm boasting, but it's because we're in a town context. And if you think about percentages, okay, actually it's probably equivalent of a village church having kind of 10 kids, but we're just in an area that has lots of people. So it's kind of, it's percentage-wise, it's probably very similar. Bible focus. What I mean, like, this is the biggest word I know how to spell. And in fact, even that. What's that? Oh, the older one. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So the teenagers. Again, we have a buffer zone, partly because they're rubbish at turning up on time. Mainly because they get themselves there in London. I don't know if it rolls the same way you guys are, but they'll get a bus in, or they'll walk down the road, or whatever. So we have this 10-15 minute buffer zone, but we treat that as kind of relational time. So they don't go in team tables. They come in. I run a leader intensive model for our teenage work. So you'd walk in and you'd think, man, this team is the size of a small church, but actually it's deliberate because I want relationships to be built. And so it's really important when a teenager comes in that the next week the leader says, oh, you know, how'd that thing go you're telling me about last week? Or, you know, or hey Fred, nice to see you again. You remember my name? You know, that kind of thing. I just think it's really important. And if you have the resources to do that, that's a good thing to try and do. So they come in, they go to the cafe, there's table tennis, pool tables, there's an Xbox set up, there is it's just a place to hang out, there's a few games they can play, that kind of thing. So there's just 10, 15 minutes, and that's just our catcher zone. So that's just to make sure that as many people are there as possible. We then get them to the front, and we do about 45... So we preach to our teenagers because the group got to a size where small group stuff didn't really work. So it was just better to stand and preach. And we preach for about half an hour to our teenagers. Now, that's not monologuing. That's kind of back and forward. And if you've ever been in a kind of a teenage preach, it's heckling. It's kind of, you know, there's a lot of fun to be had in preaching to teenagers. But it's not just kind of me standing there, right, turn to verse 3, would you now, and let's look at this, brothers and sisters. Actually, it's kind of, there's a lot of fun to be had in it. And I want to give you confidence that you can preach to teenagers and tell stories to kids. So we do that for about 45 minutes. We have a youth band. We happen to have a couple of gifted guys in our youth group who can play music. And so they lead singing for us, which is a bit of a mixed bag and a mixed blessing sometimes. But I think it's a distinctive, and the teenagers come from a culture where music matters. And so when we are part of a people who love music, love singing, it's quite important to put that on display to teenagers. So some people argue with me about that and say, well, you shouldn't get non-Christians to sing Christian songs. And I say, well, I don't. I just sing. And they can listen, or they can join in, and it's kind of I'm being slightly provocative, but actually it's really important because the teenage Christian teenagers, as they sing, if they're not embarrassed to sing, are singing the gospel to the other guys who are there, and that's a glorious thing when that happens. Well, it's an awful thing when it goes wrong. So we did that for about 45 minutes, and then we have an organised activity all together for half an hour to try and gel the group back together again. We never used to do that. We used to then just say you can spread to do your own things, and we'd have one organised thing they could join in with. But then they kind of spread, and the leaders get busy. And I'll talk about team meetings later. But I'm very deliberate in training my teenagers and in emailing leaders and emailing my leaders every week to say, here's a way you might start a conversation this week. You've got to equip your guys to start conversations with teenagers about Jesus. So even things like, hey, you know, you've been coming here for a while. What do you make of all this Jesus stuff? You know, it's not a complicated way to start a conversation, and it's very effective because they'll either go, yeah, it's all right, or they'll say, I don't really get it, or I don't believe it. And you say, oh, well, tell me why you don't believe it. You know, and actually it's the relational dimension that takes the preaching and kind of works it into the system. So that's how we do our teenage stuff. I'm happy to answer more questions about that. Bible-focused, avoid compartmentalising. That's a big word. I had to spell check that one. But what I'm meaning is this. Let the Bible spread, okay? So don't kind of squeeze it into your slot. Let it filter. You know, if it doesn't work every week, there's some guys, and I take my hat off to them because they're probably just clever, who every aspect of their evening is kind of shaped around what they're teaching in the Bible. So the games have a kind of a flavour and, you know, of what they've been teaching. I'm just not clever enough to do that. I'm not creative enough to do that. But I do try and keep coming back to the Bible through the evening. So even at the end of the group, you know, we'll try and do something that just marks this. Is the distinctive is we are a Bible teaching group. That's what we do in that regard. I think be upfront as well about who you are. So when you're making a group known, a midweek group, don't kind of say, oh, this is a great fun club for kids to come to, and then in the smallest type you can down the bottom, and we will teach your kids Bible stories. Sell it as a Bible club. You'll be surprised that people want it. You know, we live in an area where there's a lot of kind of Greek Orthodox people, and you know, there's a lot of people from other cultures that have a sense of God. And they're not afraid to send their kids to somewhere where the Bible stories are taught. And even my experience of kind of being in a fairly kind of well-to-do place was, is that parents are like, oh, you know, it's good that they get to hear Bible stories. And, you know, isn't that a lovely thing? And so actually, just don't be afraid to sell it for what it is. And if someone says no, they're saying no because it's the Bible. Do you see what I mean? Because you're going to teach them. And so I just want to give you courage to stick with our distinctive, because we've got nothing better to offer. You know, getting kids through the door is not your goal. Seeing kids saved is your goal. Now, okay, they have to come through the door to get saved, but actually you've got to be upfront about what you're doing. Bible teaching, just to encourage you here, so I would encourage you to do a series with your group. So very often, kids groups often, well, what are we going to teach them this week? And it's very easy to pluck something out of the air and think, well, you know, the teenagers, I really need to bash them about Facebook this week, so I'm going to preach a sermon about Facebook, and next week I'm going to preach to them about Twitter, because that's just as evil, or whatever. And it's very easy to stuff, but do a series. Pick some stories from the Bible in a series. And sometimes you may think, well, I want some resources to do that. Well, great. Pick a book that takes you through the book of the Bible. You know, there's plenty. I've listed some in the back that we use, like TNT and Click, and look at some of them and give it some connection. Give it some kind of weight as to where they're at. So do a series. Do it from a book of the Bible. It builds a flow. There's nothing more exciting through a term. So let me pick our Wiz Kids group, our years 2 to 4 group. There's nothing more exciting than seeing kids who know nothing about Bible stories grow in their understanding. So we're doing Daniel with them this term, all the way through, which will be interesting when we get to the last chapters. But you've got kids who are totally on it because this is, they've not heard these stories before. And they grow in their understanding, and from week to week to see what they've remembered. It's lovely to see, and it's the way God's given us the Bible. So let's use it the way he's given it to us. So do a series, do it from a book, and let it build over a term. I want to encourage you to have confidence to go for it yourself. One of the things when you might look at when you're starting a kids and a youth work is thinking, this is a unique skill set, and actually I can't do this, but you can. You're a Christian. You've got the Spirit. And if you've got the kind of inkling to be able to teach, then have a go at doing it yourself. And actually, I take I run a 7-week course for our leaders on how you teach children the Bible. And I start with a very simple thing, which is text application and presentation. And I teach them how to handle a text. I teach them how to apply it in a kid's world. And then I'll teach them about how to present it. And it's very three basic components. But if you've got a story that you're going to do, say you're going to do Daniel in the Lion's Den or something, because you've hit that part. Do your work on the text. You may have a resource to help you, but read the text. Just write down, what does this teach me about God? What does this teach me about being a follower of God? Is there a warning? Is there a promise? Is there a command? Just do your work on the text yourself, so it's doing your soul good before you teach it to others. Then use your resource about how you might shape it up. What does this look like from a 6-year-old kid? You know, what's this teaching a 6-year-old kid? How does this apply? Step into their world. I just want to encourage you that you can do it. It's not. And again, you've got to have a go. So don't just think, well, I'll just grab some resources. And the big thing to remember about teaching the Bible to kids is having one big aim and one big idea. So don't make it more complicated than that. Have one big idea. So what's the big idea in this Bible text? And hang on to it. Put it in a phrase that you could explain it to a 3 or 4-year-old. And then one big aim, i.e. what am I trying to do? Now, I tend to split my aim. I have an aim for a Christian and an aim for a non-Christian kid. And so I will try and hit both those targets when I'm doing a talk. And you can question me about that later. And remember that you're teaching Jesus. So you want to teach Jesus from wherever you are in the Bible. Luke 24, Jesus says, all the scriptures are about me. And he opens the disciples' minds to see that all the scriptures are about him. And so when you're in Genesis, don't be afraid to say, Jesus turned on the lights. Jesus put the stars in the sky. Jesus, one, because Colossians says that he's the one who did it, but actually teach Jesus. Teach them Jesus from all over the Bible. And teach his cross. teach his sacrifice. You can get there from anywhere. Why? Because it puts God on display. The most glorious place you see God on display is at the cross. And actually anything you learn about the character of God the wonder of his love or his actions find a focus at the cross. And so when you're teaching kids, teach them the cross. You can get there. And so I just want to give you courage to say you can do it yourself. You don't just have to use a resource, and just do a resource and kind of just regurgitate it. Be creative with the kids you've got and go for it yourself. Pray. you need to pray. And I know these are things that we all know, but it's very easy to kind of leave them out when you start thinking about kids' work. And what you want to do is you want to create a culture of praying, praying for the kids and praying for kids to come. Those are two things that you should be praying. So you pray for the kids you've got, and you pray for the kids. And I work really hard at this with my leadership team. So often I take the list of kids that we've got. Now, that may be 5 kids, but I give the leaders a list of the kids so that they can pray for them. And I ask them to pray for them every week. With our teenagers, it got a little bit more complicated. And so being as young and as trendy as I am, I came up with this little acronym, which has nothing to do with anything, but the K, a friend forged that in there. So basically, I tell my leaders to pray for salvation, to pray for connection, and I know that's not how you spell it, but connection with church, because we want them in church, we want them to come to church. Pray for the invitation, so kids to invite their mates, teenagers to invite their mates, and for numbers. I know it's a big thing, and I know Andrew Hurd's been talking about numbers, but we kind of give token gestures to the fact that numbers don't matter. But I used to tell my teenage leaders that numbers do matter, but they matter for the right reason. They matter because numbers in the room means numbers of people hearing the gospel, and it means that numbers are related to who's inviting. So numbers don't matter for your glory or for the greatness of your youth group. Numbers matter because it's individuals hearing the gospel. And so if you get your thinking right about numbers, it's not wrong to pray for numbers. Does that make sense? I'm not purposely trying to be controversial, but I get my team to pray for numbers. And so I give my leaders a card. They've got this, and I've asked them to stick it in their prayer diaries. If they have one, stick it on their mirror so that they remember when they clean their teeth. Be creative in how you get your church and how you get your leaders praying for the kids. Unless the Lord builds the house, we labor in vain. So we have to call out to him for his work. So make prayer a big part of it. I have this principle as well that the main leader of the group should be the main teacher. So I think that's an important part of how your work shapes up. So I think that that's because the one that they listen to, so the one who tells them to stop messing around is the one they're going to listen to the most. And so actually I think there's a correlation. You can argue with me about that, but I think that's just my experience I'm putting out there. So main leader is the main Bible teacher. Team meetings. Now, these are really important because you've got to move your team with you. Now, your team may be just you and your wife, or it may be you and Doris who serves squash. But it is really, really important to get your team on board and to have you all moving in the same direction. So you need to tell them the why. You need to tell them that we have a gospel that saves. And it's our job to pass it on to the next generation. And kids matter. And you've got to bring them along with you. And here's some ways that I've personally done that. So you set a clear direction for everyone on board. You tell them what the group's for. You tell them what it's about. Communication keeps a team on board. So I send, every Monday morning, I send an email to my team, the youth work team. And I try to keep it brief, because I know what people are like with emails. I try to mix it up a little bit so that it's not just kind of, here comes the email from Nathan again. And in that email, I try and put just something from Scripture to encourage them for the day. I try and put a thank you, a genuine thank you. It's not just a kind of a, thanks for your hard work. You've got to thank your team, because it is tireless and sometimes very discouraging work. And then I will say something like, here's this Friday's thing. Please pray for the teaching. Here's your jobs. And then somebody else on the team then emails a rote around. But then that's because we're a larger team. But you may do all of that in one email. But communication makes people feel like they've got ownership of something. They're part of it. So treat your team well, because you need them. And it's a really important thing. I pick a verse for the team. So we often have a verse that we try and remember together, a verse that kind of shapes what we do. We called our youth work Rooted. Because it not only tells the teenagers why we do what we do, but it tells my team why we do what we do, from Colossians 2, verse 6 and 7. That became a foundation verse for us. And at the start of every year, new year, I preach that verse to the team. Not standing up like this. We're sitting around in a circle. But because you want to, you have to have a love and a passion for God and Jesus yourself, if you are going to move your team with you. And so it's really important to kind of do that. And one of the habits that we try and do, and this is mixing the prayer thing in, is we try and pray before and after any youth work. So we gather the team before. So say to your team, you know, it may only again be you and somebody else, but let's pray before we start. You know, let's ask for God's help. And when the kids go home and you've packed up the stuff and you've washed up the cups and all that kind of stuff, pray again. And just be deliberate as a leader in making that happen. Just quickly over the page, because I'm aware of time's running out. Don't be afraid to discipline to maintain the Bible-first, Bible-focused. This is one of the areas I think that we can find very difficult. But actually, there's a system, so a good system is a warning. So if people are disrupting the way you've shaped up the group and are not listening to the Bible and are not respecting the Bible-first thing, then you can give them a warning and say, actually, this is why we do what we do. If you don't want to be part of it, then I'm afraid we're going to have to take action. It's a warning. Then you might say something like, next time you do it, you're going to end up just sitting next to one of the leaders in the group, which is sometimes enough of a deterrent. And then actually, if it goes any further, you might say, if it's a Sunday thing, you might say, I'm going to take you back to your parents, or next week you're going to sit with your parents. You can't come next week. So it is worth implementing, but don't be afraid to do it. With our teenage work, we just stated it really clearly from the front, and often at extreme points where it's been very difficult, I've stood up before the talk and I've just said, guys, now's your chance to go home. If you don't want to listen, it's no problem to me, I'll just wait here for a few minutes. And people used to get up and walk out, and that was fine, because we gave them the chance, but you've got to discipline to maintain Bible first, Bible focus, and we've had to throw some guys out. But my relationship's still good with some of those guys. So I still see some of them in the town. Some of them have kind of really gone away. But the point is, you've got to discipline, because it's our distinctive and it's the best thing we've got to offer. And if it's being disrupted, then for the sake of those who are there and who want to be there, you have to. Now, I recognise that when you've got a group of 30, losing a few is less significant than when you've got a group of 5 and you lose 2. But I want to give you courage. So John T, who was my predecessor at... is it predecessor? No, what was it? The one who was before me. That's the one. I don't use big words, so I'm not very good at them. And he ran the teenage work for a while. And there was a stage where there was 2 of them on a Friday night. And the team, they said, let's just keep going. And John T kept going. And the group, you know, eventually grew to 30 kids. You know, and it's kind of... But they were tempted, when there was only 2, to give up. And I think coupled with the discipline thing is, don't be discouraged if you only end up with a couple but who want to be there and who want to listen, because that's the seeds of a healthy youth work, because of what we're doing. We have a gospel that saves, and we want teenagers and children to love Jesus, to be saved by him, and to be discipled. The other important thing about the shape of your youth work is you have to show kids that church matters. There's a couple of ways that you do that, really. First of all, you show kids matter in church. So you can't say that kind of kids' work is just this kind of add-on. You want kids to know that church is really important. And actually, the kids' work is essentially part of church. And so one of the ways that you can do that, and we try and do this at Enfield, is by doing a kids' talk in church. It shows that there's kind of, we think they matter, and we want them to be there. And it shows that, you know, the pastors love the kids and care for them, that kind of idea. Excuse me. And then show the kids that church matters. That's the other way around, okay? So it's terrible if you're saying to the kids, oh, you know, church is brilliant, but you're never there. Or, you know, church is brilliant, but when you're there, you're kind of unenthusiastic, or you grumble about it, you know. Your kids, if you have your own, will pick up your views of church, and that's equally true for the kids you have in your youth work. So church is really important.
Can I ask on that? Both of those points are both really helpful, but there's still a very slight assumption, if I'm wrong, that they will be there already on Sunday. How do you show those midweek?
Yeah.
No intent. Is that coming in?
No, well, I've got it on my scribbled notes here. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. How do you show them that church matters?
Yeah.
Particularly with, I mean, I don't know what time you meet on a Sunday morning, but a lot of our guys are like, well, don't
we get
out of bed?
Yeah, well, we have 2 services on a Sunday, and I was just about to come onto this. So for midweek kids, I think it's so important that you show them church matters. And the way that you do that is by inviting them. is by talking about it. So actually, whilst you're not the public gathering of the church, but your team is church, so that the relationships that they see between the team members, between the way we treat one another, they are getting a taste of church. Also with our work, we try and structure it in a way, the shape, so it feels a little bit like church. So when they walk into church on a Sunday, it's not completely alien that they'll have to sit down and listen to someone speak. And it's not completely alien that they'll have to sit or stand and sing a song. So we try and work that in. Now that, okay, there's no jumping around and big actions for every song for the little ones on a Sunday. But there is a kids' song. We do sing a kids' song that they would sing at their kids' club and they'd know. So I think just making it known. For the teenagers, we put a cafe on before church on a Sunday night. So we recognise that lots of the teenagers that we get either have sport on a Sunday morning or they don't get out of bed. And so one of the things we really try and encourage is get into church on Sunday night. And so we run a little cafe before church, which is just about church, really. So you come, you have a hot chocolate, and then come along to church. And that's had mixed degrees of success in getting them along to church.
And just with the little ones, I'm 100% with you about you don't use the kids to get to the families.
Yeah.
But obviously at that age, they're not the decision makers.
No, that's right.
So
you can
get them all fired up. And I've seen it as well about how the kids are really excited.
Yeah, yeah.
They go home and dad doesn't want to get out of bed.
No, that's right. Absolutely.
Do you have some kind of selling the church matters to families as well?
Yeah, not formalised, but we try and do it relationally. So And again, this is why I can't tell you what to do, because the shape of even just the layout of your building. So in our building at the moment, we have an area where we can invite the families to have a coffee while the kids' work's happening. And we're trying to utilise that for building relationship and trying to show them church matters. We always make sure we kind of have leaflets around when parents are dropping off their kids so they can see what church is about and what we do and when we meet. So, you know, everyone's going to have a different way of working it out. But as long as you've got the kind of mentality that church matters, then you will try and find a way of communicating that to the families. But it's really helpful. Yeah, yeah. Thank you, mate. Communicating. Oh, sorry. Don't overreact to stuff. One of the dangers of kids' work and children's work is that as soon as a tweak happens or a kid gets grumpy about the fact, oh, I don't like this group anymore, we suddenly overreact to keep them. But just hold your nerve, hold your course. Bible teaching, you know, it's Jesus-centered youth work. It's our distinctive. It's the best thing we've got to offer. Hold your nerve. and even if you lose kids, hold your nerve. So don't overreact. Communicate change to the church. Again, you know, so I think, and it depends on how the leadership of your church works, but because we've had a full-time person doing youth work, and because the pastor is so very on board with the youth stuff, anytime we've tried to do a big change to the youth work or try and reshuffle it, it's been communicated to the whole church because they've got to come with you. The danger is if you're making radical changes, which at Enfield we haven't had to make really big radical changes, then you will get some backlash, which is why it's really important that you communicate. So it might go something like this. You know, you change your club from a club where it's games with a little bit of Jesus teaching at the end, and you change it to Bible first, Bible focused, and you start to lose some of the kids. And the parents come to you and say, you know, you've lost my son. You know, he doesn't want to come anymore. He's no longer going to hear about Jesus. And all the pressure's on you. but you've got to hold your nerve. You've got to hold your course. But communicating stuff to the church is really important because it brings the family with you in what you're trying to achieve. Music matters as well, I think. Music for kids is quite important. There's lots of, I've put some resources on there because music helps kids to remember stuff. There's loads of good memory verse songs. There's loads of kind of... just good things. It's quite fun. You may not be musically minded, but then just shove on a CD and kind of mime. It's okay. Trish is looking at me funny now. Just a few extra things for teenagers. I'm well aware I've run out of time, but a couple of extra things for teenagers. One-to-one with teenagers is very important. You can't really do that with kids, but trying to pick up discipleship especially, just trying to say, would you like to read the Bible with me? If it's kind of do it before church. So just say, you know, come for 15 minutes before church. Let's crack open a Bible together and let's read a bit and let's pray. It helps you to know what's going on with them, and it helps them to get into the scriptures. So one-to-one stuff's really important. Create a tribe. Now, what do I mean by that? With teenagers, they are very, very tribal. And so if you work hard at not... So Jesus-centered Bible teaching is our absolute distinctive, has to be the centre. But there is a kind of a package that goes with it. And so just things like communicating Bible to them in a tribal way. So use media if you've got the skills to do that. They love being together. Teenagers will take almost any opportunity they can to be together if you've created them into a tribe. And so there was a phase, particularly with our teenagers, where whatever you'd put on, you know, even if it was, I'm going to show you the most boring film in the whole wide world, they would come because they just wanted to be together because they're tribal. And I just think you can nurture that and foster that. It's not our primary work, it's not things, but it will help create a context into which you can teach the Bible and build relationships with them. And then work at the package. And I think what I mean is, you know, study hard the Bible with them, and then play hard with them as well. You know, show them that you love them and that you just pay an interest in them. So the package is kind of making sure you ask them. Is, you know, at one level, it is just where you come in and you can hear the Bible. But at another level, it's really important. So as I look back to my life as a teenager, and I look back to my youth work, I'm massively grateful for the teaching I had, but I'm also massively grateful for the guys who taught it to me, because they were people that God put in my way who were living what they taught. And so I think that's what I'm talking about, the package, is it's a life and doctrine, with teenagers especially. So you're not going to go and hang out with a three-year-old in a park, you know, and come and hang out with me for a bit. But actually, a teenager, you know, you're painting your fence. Invite a couple of the teenagers along to be with you. It's an all-of-life thing with them. So work at the package. I think that's what I'm trying to say badly. Sorry, Andy, my time's gone. I didn't think it was going to take that long, but. Yeah, so I've just put some things in there. So this is where my mind chased originally. There's all sorts of stuff, especially if you're starting kids' work, that you've got to just sort out and do well. So things like DBS, which is the kind of police checking side of things. You know, if you're going to have someone in, it's good to be able to say to folk coming to your church, actually all our leaders are police checked. So if you want help with something like that, FIC is well good at things like that. So just ask them. Keep good registers of attendance. It just covers your back, I think, particularly if you're getting lots of kids in from the area. Good practice. I tell you what I've done. I've put my email on the back, down the bottom of the back page. And we've got lots of good practice guides and things like that. And if it's helpful to you to kind of see some of those, then please just email me. But it's things like, you know, if you're starting a teenage work and they get hold of your Facebook account, you know, it's being careful with kind of how you communicate. It's just being wise. And so there's loads of practicalities to sort out. There's some of the teaching materials we use, plus we write a lot of some of our own material. There's some music that some albums that we found helpful. But I'm sorry I've run out of time, but I'm really happy to answer anything that you guys would like to. Shall I pray quickly, or do you want to pray?
Thank you. Father, thank you so much for Nathan. Thank you for the gifts you've given him, for the way that these gifts of wisdom, this insight, this clear passion for youngsters has developed. Father, thank you for this focus on Jesus and the words. And now, Father, please help us to take from this what you want us to. Make not get lost now, Lord, in the next minutes of getting coffee and rushing around. But Father, please, enable us to build effective children, youth ministries, which will be for the praise of King Jesus, which will be for the blessing of the children in our communities. And we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Amen.